Yeah, Ghislaine Maxwell has proven herself pretty untrustworthy, but she's also the source of the bulk of the information we have about their intimate relationship, besides all the pictures of them together, including this really gross one of Ghislaine massaging Jeffrey's feet with her boobs on his private jet.
Why must you? Jump scare. No, 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 no.
Welcome to another edition of This F***ing Guy, the show that spotlights one f***ing guy making America worse and takes you on a deep dive into why they suck. I'm Erin Ryan, host of Crooked Media's Hysteria podcast.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco, the other host of Crooked Media's Hysteria podcast.
I have to say, Alyssa, that this episode made me feel like a crazy person, because the more one learns about this particular f***ing guy and the f***ing guys she spent her life serving, the more you start to think that maybe there actually is a giant global pedophile conspiracy.
That's right, folks. We're finally doing it. QAnon for people with basic media literacy. We're talking about Ghislaine Maxwell, which I learned from an angry op-ed by one of her siblings is not pronounced Ghislaine.
It should be.
Convicted trafficker and child sex abuse facilitator with a black book with a significant Venn diagram overlap with people who have appeared on the Time 100. Daughter of a media mogul who died mysteriously. Associate of many people who have also died mysteriously. Erstwhile girlfriend of one of history's great perverts.
But also a totem of everything wrong with the metastatic entitlement of the wealthy. How, if you have enough money and you have enough important friends, everybody from local law enforcement all the way up to the president of the United States will debase themselves to protect your silver spoon right to escape consequences for even the most depraved crimes.
Before starting this episode, we recommend you gather your materials. A large bulletin board, pushpins, brightly colored yarn, and photos of the world's rich and powerful. It's time to go into True Detective Season 1 mode.
The difference between Ghislaine Maxwell's crimes and Rust Cole is that Maxwell's crimes weren't a work of fiction in the brilliant on-screen pairing of Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey. Maxwell's crimes are incredibly f***ed up, and they implicate a lot of powerful people. And they certainly seem like they're at the center of an active cover-up that goes all the way up to the president. And they really happened. Ghislaine Maxwell was born on Christmas Day, 1961, the youngest child of Robert Maxwell, Britain's patron saint of greed and gluttony.
To paraphrase journalist and Ghislaine Maxwell expert John Sweeney, in order to fully wrap our minds around the arch-villain that is Ghislaine, we have to talk about her dad.
Maxwell cut a giant profile in the UK, but he's not as well-known in the US. But the more I learn about him, the more I think that Logan Roy, the tyrant protagonist father in Succession, was based on him.
Do you think she knows how much, like, she looks so much like her dad?
Even, like, her mannerisms.
Yeah.
Robert Maxwell was born Jan Ludwig Hyman Benjamin Hoch in a shtetl in Czechoslovakia to a poor Jewish Orthodox family. His background was both tragic and mysterious. He was a war hero fighting the Nazis all over Europe during World War II, and most of his family was killed at Auschwitz.
Shortly after the war ended, Maxwell met and married a French woman named Betty and proceeded to get her pregnant over and over and over again. The two had 9 children. Ghislaine was the youngest.
3 days after Ghislaine was born, her 15-year-old brother Michael was in a horrible car accident that left him brain dead for the next 7 years until his death. Ghislaine's early life was characterized by neglect from parents racked with grief. By the time she was 3, she'd developed anorexia.
Food was a big issue in the Maxwell house, and the fact that Robert was a sadistic, abusive ogre known to joylessly shovel spoonfuls of caviar into his mouth didn't make things easier. As Ghislaine got older and became his favorite child, he still took great pride in her slender frame and once locked her out of the fridge when he learned she'd been sneaking snacks.
The Maxwell clan, Robert, Betty, the 7 living children, and their butlers and staff lived in a massive 51-room estate called Headington Hill Hall that was leased to him for 99 years, suspiciously cheaply from the local government, in exchange for him promising to restore it.
The origins of Maxwell's wealth and empire are mysterious. He went from dirt poor to one of the most powerful and feared men in media. The fact that Maxwell was using his publishing house to push Soviet propaganda was just one reason people thought he was working for the Soviets. He also spoke 9 languages. No beating the spy allegations here.
And lots of people think Robert Maxwell was also a Mossad agent.
Why?
Because he did a lot of things that a Mossad agent would do. Maxwell hid his Jewish heritage for decades, but he also helped smuggle airplane parts to Israel during the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, according to authors John Loftus and Mark Ahrens. Maxwell sold bugged promise software to several major intelligence and government targets like Sandia National Labs, which allowed Israel to spy on computer systems, according to the book Robert Maxwell, Israel's Super Spy. In 1984, Maxwell visited Israel for the first time that we know of, and and pledged $50 million to the Jewish state.
That's in addition to the circumstantial evidence linking Maxwell to British intelligence, especially during World War II. At the height of his empire, Maxwell was the chair of the Oxford United Football Club and owned a 50% stake in MTV Europe, the Daily Mirror, and several other entities which were held in Maxwell Holdings and other complicated corporate structures that lent themselves well to fraud and crimes. In addition to being a propaganda mouthpiece, he used his media properties as cudgels against his enemies.
Robert Maxwell also had a big dumb yacht, because of fucking course he did, that he named the Lady Galen. Galen was never a serious student. One source referred to her as a flibbertigibbet. It's the only time I've ever heard that word outside of The Sound of Music. But she skated into Oxford, where classmates remember her as obsessed with status. Some former classmates also remember her as horny.
Nothing wrong with being horny in college.
Of course you defend horniness, Alyssa. You're always, always defending horniness.
That's me.
This is just to say that Galen never gave the impression that she cared about anything except having important friends and pleasing her father. But it's not like school mattered all that much anyway. Right after she graduated, her daddy started handing her important jobs for which she was unqualified.
Shades of Ivanka Trump.
Yes, in fact, Robert Maxwell did have a lot in common with the current American president, from his borderline creepy fixation on his favorite daughter to his misogyny and abusive behavior. And then there were the crooked business practices, which we haven't gotten into yet.
Galen's first big girl job was director of the Oxford United Football Club. It was handed to her when she was 22 years old and fresh out of Oxford. Later, her dad helped her start a company called Maxwell Corporate Gifts, another way for a spoiled daughter of privilege to pretend that she had marketable skills.
Lindsay Bluth vibes.
During this time, Robert Maxwell exerted enormous influence and control over his children's personal lives. Galen was no exception. Her first serious boyfriend was named, I shit you not, Count Gianfranco Cigogna. He was the heir of an Italian.
He's a count.
He was the heir of an Italian hotel fortune who was also a skilled skier and helicopter pilot. Robert was into the count because he was rich on his own, but Daddy Maxwell also had a wandering eye on his daughter's behalf, at one point trying to set her up with John F. Kennedy Jr.
How different history would have been. Meanwhile, Galen continued to do what many rich and useless people do best, hang around other rich and useless people. In the 1980s, she founded a private women's-only social club in London called the Kit Kat Club, which aimed to host women-only hobnobbing events. In short, it was a way for Galen Maxwell to suck up to other women she deemed important enough to know. Oxford classmate Anna Pasternak told the BBC that Maxwell didn't have many female friends. Galen did not actually seem to like women all that much if they didn't give her social access to more powerful men.
Never trust a guy's girl.
Never trust a guy's girl.
Never. To this day, there's no information out there about who Galen invited to attend the Kit Kat Club gatherings. But if I had been friends with Galen Maxwell, I'd probably be keeping it under wraps too.
In 1991, after purchasing the New York Daily News, Robert sent Galen to New York for the long term to be his social envoy. Basically, show up to parties and prattle around with important people, and to help launch a weekly magazine called The European. Galen lived in a massive apartment near Columbus Circle and did as her daddy wished, rubbing elbows with New York's rich and famous.
But her early 90s New York City party montage would be short, as on November 5th, 1991, Robert Maxwell disappeared from the deck of the Lady Galen and was found hours later bobbing dead and naked in the waters off the coast of the Canary Islands.
The family rushed to Spain, where 29-year-old Galen was nominated to be the one to give comment to the press, wearing cowboy boot earrings for reasons known only to her. I have a similar blazer.
This was a huge story. Like, imagine if, say, one of the Koch brothers was found naked floating in Tampa Bay. But given what we found out next, before Maxwell's corpse had cooled off, something smelled, and it wasn't the waterlogged body of Robert Maxwell.
In the weeks after he'd fallen from the Lady Galen, it came to light that he'd stolen somewhere between 400 and 800 million pounds from the pension fund of the Mirror newspaper group.
Nothing says robber baron like stealing from your employees. He'd also used the complicated structures of his many corporations to artificially inflate the value of his assets, borrow way more money than he should have been allowed against those wildly inflated assets, and other business crimes, to use a technical term.
Reports say that shortly before he died, his son Kevin informed Robert that a major shareholder in Maxwell Holdings was about to sell out of their position, thus starting a spiral that would almost certainly engulf the entire empire. Robert had to have known during his last night alive that things were coming undone.
Days after Robert turned up in the Atlantic, he was buried on the Mount of Olives in Israel, a place where only very important people are buried, as the belief goes that when God raises the dead, he'll start there. Several members of Israeli intelligence and the Prime Minister of Israel attended the funeral, which again did not help Robert beat the Robert Maxwell was Mossad allegations.
Was Robert's death really an accident? Like, did he actually have a heart attack on the poop deck and plop into the water without anybody noticing? Or did he jump? Why was he completely naked when he was found? What could explain the strange wounds on his body found during the autopsy?
There's been speculation that one of the intelligence services he was doing espionage for did it.
And then there's my favorite bonkers but highly unfeasible theory.
Let me guess. Fake death?
You know I love a fake death.
You love a fake death.
One theory is that Robert Maxwell did not actually die. That big body they found bobbing off Spain was a double, and the real Robert Maxwell was spirited away by one of the intelligence entities he'd served, leaving his family in financial shambles and legal trouble, but most importantly, preventing Robert Maxwell from facing the consequences of his actions.
In the aftermath of Robert's death, the money evaporated. Maxwell's family assets were sold off to satisfy creditors. Because of the suspicious nature of their patriarch's death, there was no payout from his life insurance policies. And in the unfolding months, Kevin and Ian Maxwell, who took over different parts of their father's empire, were arrested in their fancy houses and charged with fraud alongside with their financial advisor. It was, at the time, the biggest fraud case in British history. The post-daddy era was a confusing time for Ghislaine. She maintained that his death was no accident. He'd been murdered. She was finally free of the monster who'd raised her and had signed every check she'd ever earned, but she also had to do the humiliating task of decamping from her lavish Columbus Circle apartment to a much more modest pied-à-terre on the Upper East Side. She was paid a measly £80,000-a-year allowance from a trust fund.
Oh no, not the Upper East Side. When a Vanity Fair writer visited her shortly after Robert died, there were newspaper clippings about her dad all over her floor. She didn't seem to think that her dad had done anything wrong either, telling the journalist, "He wasn't a crook. A thief is somebody who steals money. Do I think my father did that? No, I don't know what he did. Obviously, something happened."
But don't worry about our poor little rich girl. She was still a part of New York society. According to author and socialite Christina Oxenberg, a distant cousin of Prince Andrew, who first met Ghislaine at the wedding between Andrew Cuomo and Carrie Kennedy in 1990.
Wait a second. I got to put some more yarn on this giant bulletin board. Andrew Cuomo makes an appearance.
Yep.
Hello, Governor. It's safe to say that Christina Oxenberg really fucking hates Ghislaine Maxwell.
How do you know that?
Well, she titled her book Trash, Encounters with Ghislaine Maxwell.
A high society burn book. We love it.
Now, we don't know how or when Ghislaine met the shitty man who would replace her father, Jeffrey Epstein. They were first publicly linked in 1992. Oxenberg says that Ghislaine started working for Jeffrey basically right after Bob Maxwell died. But it's feasible that they met earlier, since Ghislaine's dad and future boyfriend knew each other during the 1980s.
Oxenberg describes Ghislaine as obsessed with Jeffrey, doing whatever it took to please him. She says that in the 90s, Ghislaine approached her to ask if she'd ghostwrite her autobiography, hoping that having a book would help Jeffrey take her seriously. Oxenberg claims that Maxwell was desperate for Jeffrey to marry her, and Jeffrey pretended to not notice how in love with him Ghislaine was.
Oxenberg further alleges that during that 1997 meeting with Ghislaine, Maxwell openly discussed getting girls for Jeffrey, and that the girls didn't matter because they were, quote, trash. Oxenberg wrote that she didn't know at the time that the trash Ghislaine was describing were teenagers. Not everything Ghislaine got into during the 90s was directly tied to Epstein. In 1996, she was arrested for drunk driving in the UK after being pulled over in London for driving without headlights at 4:30 in the morning. She led the arresting officers to her brother Ian's house, served them tea, and looked through a family photo album with them. She was fined £1,000 and banned from driving in the UK for a year. Now, if you're interested in learning the details of the Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell crimes, there are plenty of places to get that. We recommend checking out the work of Julie K. Brown for the Miami Herald. Brown's investigative series and all the sources we use for this are linked in our show notes.
But we don't want to get too deep into the details of the crimes because they are pretty damn dark.
Yeah, it's the same story over and over again. Ghislaine Maxwell would identify a girl who she thought would satisfy her boyfriend slash employer's perversion, often underage, unsupervised, and underprivileged. She would groom the girl by providing a false sense of safety with her posh accent and Mary Poppins vibes. She would offer the girl money, access, or promises in exchange for performing a massage on Jeffrey Epstein, and Epstein would turn those massages into non-consensual sexual encounters, up to and including rape. Maxwell did this hundreds and hundreds of times to a dizzying number of girls, children. Some of the victims said that Ghislaine was especially cruel to them. Some said she participated in the abuse herself. Some say she trained other girls to do the recruiting for her, like a fucked up MLM. Epstein and Ghislaine deny any of this ever happened.
The abuse occurred all over Epstein's properties, from the Manhattan Mansion to Palm Beach to his Zorro Ranch in New Mexico to his private Caribbean island known as Little St. Jeff's. Victims were transported to and fro on a private plane nicknamed the Lolita Express after the Nabokov novel from the perspective of a man who is sexually obsessed with his stepdaughter. And meanwhile, with Ghislaine's help, Epstein was collecting important friends, from former world leaders to Nobel Prize winners to giants of academia to celebrities like Prince Andrew, Naomi Campbell, David Copperfield, Michael Jackson, Cate Blanchett, and Leonardo DiCaprio. And of course, his Palm Beach neighbor and future U.S. President Donald Trump.
This Society Pages in the Streets, Sex Crimes in the Sheets lifestyle went on from when Epstein and Maxwell first got together in the early 90s until Maxwell stopped working for Epstein around 2009. There are literally thousands of pictures of Ghislaine Maxwell taken at parties with celebrities and powerful people available on Getty Images.
It's a wild amount of photos. One particularly jarring image shows Donald Trump and Maxwell sitting next to each other in the front row of an Anand John fashion show in the early 2000s. Anand John is currently serving a 59-year prison sentence in California for sexually abusing and raping women and girls he'd lured to his home with the promise of modeling jobs.
Like, the more I researched this, the more I was like, wait, is there actually a group of powerful sex pests operating at the highest echelons of government and culture?
Like, feels like it.
Is there?
Now, simply knowing Jeffrey Epstein in no way means that these world leaders and celebrities participated in or even knew about his extracurricular crimes. Listing these celebrities is more an indictment of the fake-ass social climbing of the Epstein-Maxwell partnership.
But it's also hard to wrap your head around the idea that none of them had an inkling about what was happening behind the scenes, especially if they were traveling with them, especially if there were always random skinny teenagers around offering massages, especially if, like Prince Andrew, they threw out a medically impossible alibi when BBC journalist Emily Maitlis asked about it.
She described dancing with you.
No.
And you profusely sweating.
I didn't sweat at the time because I had suffered what I would describe as an overdose of adrenaline in the Falklands War when I was shot at, and I simply it was almost impossible for me to sweat.
The nature of Ghislaine and Jeffrey's relationship is pretty fucking confusing. She was sort of Epstein's employee, but also his girlfriend. She manages multiple properties, including the estate in Palm Beach, down to the road and around the corner from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago. She managed his schedule. She wanted to be his wife. Maybe?
She recently told the Department of Justice that she and Epstein rarely had sex because he couldn't have sex because he had a heart condition. Sure, Jan. She also said that the romantic relationship ended because Jeffrey wouldn't hang out with her on 9/11.
Erin, I'm sorry. Wait, why? 9/11 is why Maxwell and Epstein broke up?
I mean, that's what she told the Department of Justice. But she got over it quickly. By late October, she was in attendance at Heidi Klum's Pimps and Hookers-themed Halloween party at New York City's Lot 61, along with future United States President and First Lady Donald Trump and Melania Knaus. Her date was Prince Andrew. Pictures of it made it into the Daily Mail. Now, we can't show those pictures because the Daily Mail owns the rights to them. So I drew a picture instead of... So there's Ghislaine, as you can see.
Okay, I
see.
Her
little bob. She's got a blonde wig on. It's kind of disheveled. She's wearing a leopard print coat, like a trench, some pleather pants and some high-heeled boots. Mm-hmm. And in the middle is Donald Trump, and he's got stink lines coming off. I just drew those because I thought he probably stinks or wears too much cologne. And then Melania Trump is thinking, help me.
People who are not old enough to remember the Y2K era cannot possibly grasp how absurdly inappropriate it was.
Absolutely. Okay, so it's 2001. Jet fuel melted both steel beams and Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein's fairy tale romance. But she didn't stop working for him or partying with him or flying on his plane. She even continued to share a bed with him sometimes, a friends with benefits situation, she told the feds.
Okay. So they didn't have sex, and she knew he didn't care about her, but he was still paying her to manage his properties and procure girls for him. This makes about as much sense as the rules of Quidditch.
J.K. Rowling catching some strays. Yeah, Ghislaine Maxwell has proven herself pretty untrustworthy, but she's also the source of the bulk of the information we have about their intimate relationship, besides all the pictures of them together, including this really gross one of Ghislaine massaging Jeffrey's feet with her boobs on his private jet.
Why must you? Jump scare. No, 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 no.
We have evidence that regardless of when and how much they actually bumped uglies, their lives were deeply entwined for almost two decades.
Every scam has a shelf life, and by the early 2000s, some observers were starting to wonder what Jeffrey Epstein actually did.
In 2002, New York Magazine published an article calling Epstein an international money man of mystery. It traced some confusing parts of the man's backstory. He'd never graduated from college. Nevertheless, somehow he landed a job teaching math at Dalton, one of the fanciest private schools in Manhattan. How? Nobody knows. He was eventually fired from that job for, quote, poor performance, and then was hired by Ace Greenberg at the now defunct but then going gangbusters Bear Stearns. He was apparently really good at trading and was made a senior partner within 4 years, but eventually left Bear Stearns for, again, reasons that nobody knows for sure. In 1981, he started his own wealth management firm called J. Epstein & Company, where he only took clients on with at least $1 billion in assets.
In 1981, there were only a few hundred billionaires on the planet who met J. Epstein & Co.'s minimum threshold, but somehow Jeffrey was able to convince a non-zero number of them to work with him. We don't know how much money he managed, and his financial client list was another closely guarded secret.
We do know the name of at least one big fish Epstein landed, Les Wexner, the founder of limited brand clothing stores, including Victoria's Secret. You know, Alyssa, I always thought the Victoria's Secret fashion show looked a little bit like a brothel infomercial.
Completely agree. Epstein had an odd warlock-like hold over Wexner. Rumor has it that Wexner sold Epstein his 45,000 square foot house in Manhattan for $1. Wexner would later admit, after Epstein's crimes became public knowledge, that at one point Epstein had made $46 million of his money disappear. Nobody knows where that money went. Poof, it's gone. Wexner says he's embarrassed he ever knew Epstein and had no idea he was such a deviant.
That 2002 New York Magazine article contains the now infamous blurb from Donald Trump. I've known Jeff for 15 years. Terrific guy. He's a lot of fun to be with. It is even said that he likes beautiful women as much as I do. And many of them are on the younger side. No doubt about it. Jeffrey enjoys his social life. Well, that's one way to put it.
It sounds like Donald Trump knew what Jeffrey Epstein was doing at the time, and he remained friends with him for years and years, regardless of that knowledge.
Either that, or Donald Trump is a fucking idiot. Which is also possible.
In 2003, another crack in the Epstein House of Mirrors. Journalist Vicky Ward interviewed him for a Vanity Fair assignment. She was supposed to chase similar questions to the ones raised by the New York Magazine profile. But while she was working on the piece, she met Maria and Annie Farmer, teenage sisters who went on the record accusing Epstein and Maxwell of grooming and sexually abusing them in multiple locations.
When Epstein caught wind of what Ward was up to, he went ripshit, incessantly calling, bullying, and threatening then-editor Graydon Carter. Carter had a severed cat's head and a live bullet left on his doorstep in separate incidents. Vicky Ward was pregnant with twins at the time, and Epstein, and by extension Maxwell's goons, threatened her unborn children. When the article was published, the part about the sexual abuse suffered by the Farmer sisters had been edited out. What's crazy about this is as close as they got to getting caught. After two of their victims had been willing to go on the record, Galen and Jeffrey just kept doing what they'd been doing.
Yeah, it was like they both believed that nothing could possibly happen to either of them, and the fact that they almost got caught just didn't register.
In March 2005, another piece of the teetering Jenga tower was pulled out. A 14-year-old girl told her parents that she'd been sexually abused at Epstein's Palm Beach mansion. She told cops that two girls had lured her there by the opportunity to make a few hundred dollars if she gave Epstein a massage. And when the police spoke to those two girls, they discovered that those two girls had been brought by two other girls and all the way down. Police found dozens of underage victims. It wasn't long before investigators uncovered what prosecutors would later characterize as a pyramid scheme of sexual abuse. At the top of the pyramid was Jeffrey Epstein and the lady of the house, Ghislaine Maxwell. The FBI raided Epstein's home in 2007. They found a lot incriminating him. Massage tables, boxes of sex toys, CCTV cameras, and perhaps, most disturbingly, evidence that about half a dozen hard drives had recently been removed from the premises. What's on those hard drives? Have they ever been recovered? By whom? Do they still exist? Have they been destroyed? Who tipped Epstein and company off about the raid, giving them enough of a heads up to grab the hard drives and run? We don't know.
But feds also found evidence that directly incriminated Ghislaine. Handwritten notes about which girls were available to service Jeffrey and when, which girls had conflicts like track practice that would interfere with their ability to sate Epstein's thrice daily massage demands. She was arranging massages for Epstein, and she clearly knew these girls were in high school.
So like 50 girls who all told the same story were up against one gross old man and one haughty and unlikable British lady in Florida. But Glenn Maxwell had a secret weapon. Soft sexism.
That's right. Despite everything that authorities found indicating that Maxwell was basically the head of HR for the most fucked up company to ever exist, including Comcast, the 53-page indictment that Palm Beach County State Attorney Barry Kreischer had prepared for was Epstein only.
However, That indictment was never filed, thanks to one of the most suspicious and notorious sweetheart deals in modern legal history.
Unbeknownst to Kreischer, U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of Florida, Alex Acosta had secretly cut a deal with Epstein's legal team.
Conveniently, the head of Epstein's legal team was Jay Lefkowitz, a former colleague of Acosta's at Kirkland & Ellis, a prominent D.C. law firm.
We cannot overemphasize how insanely lenient this deal was. I mean, Aaron, Keith Raniere of NXIVM Sex Cult is serving 120 years in prison for roughly the same thing.
With adults.
With adults.
The deal dictated that Epstein was to register as a sex offender and plead guilty to minor state charges. The deal referred to one of the 14-year-old victims as a prostitute. Rather than going to prison, or even better yet, being thrown into a pond full of alligators, Epstein was given a 13-month sentence, but was allowed to leave jail for work release up to 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, to be brought to and from his office in his own private limo.
The deal was also unusual because sex offenders aren't usually given work release on account of the fact that they are sex offenders. But Epstein's work release was approved without pushback from the state of Florida.
Epstein was also granted immunity on all federal criminal charges, which shut down the FBI probe. Worse yet, the agreement inoculated any co-conspirators, both known and unknown, against any charges.
Sounds like a blanket pardon to me. That meant that anybody who had anything to do with Jeffrey Epstein's systematic sexual abuse of children would face no punishment at all. Epstein's victims were not informed of the deal before it was finalized, which is a violation of the law.
Oh, Alyssa, don't you know? Laws are for poor people. That's my Ghislaine Maxwell. It's not how she sounds. By the time the feds raided Epstein's Palm Beach property, Ghislaine had moved on romantically to a new boyfriend with a lot of money, Ted Waite, the billionaire co-founder of Gateway Computers. Waite offered her plenty of access. As a mega donor to the Clinton Foundation, he and Ghislaine were frequent attendees of Clinton family events. Waite ultimately broke up with Ghislaine in 2010 because it got too hot to be associated with someone who is so closely affiliated with Jeffrey Epstein.
Just doing a little napkin math, 2010 was 3 years after the house of the guy she worked for and also used to date was raided. Ted Waite must have been using a Gateway computer to load the front page of the Palm Beach Post.
This fucking guy is brought to you by SimpliSafe. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. So here's something I do to unwind after a long day of reading the news and talking about the news. I listen to like true crime podcasts, or I watch a scary true crime documentary. But the problem with that is when I go to bed, then I sometimes can't sleep because I'm scared about the true crime podcast or documentary that I just watched. Having SimpliSafe at my house makes me able to talk myself down from these late night freakouts by reminding myself that actually, if there was a murderer crouching outside my bedroom window, somebody from SimpliSafe would be yelling at them. Old school systems only trigger after someone breaks in. That's too late. By then, the intruder has time to grab up valuables and the trauma of a robbery on you and your family has already been inflicted. And they've probably let my cat out and I live in coyote country and she's going to get eaten immediately. With SimpliSafe Active Guard, crime can be stopped before it happens. AI-powered security cameras alert monitoring agents to suspicious individuals approaching your home. They can see and speak to them in real time, triggering alarms and spotlights, and even request urgent police dispatch all before a break-in happens. No other home security system offers this kind of active protection both inside and outside of the home. Advanced AI technology tells friend from foes. SimpliSafe's AI tech ignores familiar faces and alerts agents to threats based on information you give the app. This means trusted visitors like your family, neighbors, or dog walker won't trigger false alarms. Save 50% on your SimpliSafe security system when you sign up for a professional monitoring plan and get your first month free. Visit simplisafe.com/guy to customize yours. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. In 2012, Maxwell continued with her useless rich lady life, launching an ocean charity called Terramar, which raised money, but according to the New York Times, never paid out any grants.
A charity to protect the ocean? The thing that killed her dad?
She must have hoped that this whole child abuse machine that she helped run thing would blow over, but she clearly didn't account for the bravery and strength of Epstein's survivors, who kept fighting over the legality of the ridiculous plea deal that Epstein had been given. For a long time, Florida's newly elected female attorney general kind of stonewalled them, taking up other anti-sex trafficking ventures, but refusing to touch the Epstein case. Hey, Alyssa, do you know who the attorney general of Florida was from 2011 until 2019?
Pam fucking Bondi,
current attorney general of the United States under President Trump. interesting. In 2011, an Epstein survivor named Virginia Roberts Dufresne told her story to the UK newspaper The Mail on Sunday. In it, she claimed that she had been turned into a sex slave by Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and had been forced to service scores of Epstein's famous friends, including Prince Andrew.
Virginia said she had been recruited to work for Epstein by Ghislaine Maxwell from Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago, where she was a 15-year-old spa attendant in 2000, a claim that the president himself backed up in 2025.
Mr. President, did one of those stolen, persons, that include Virginia Jeffrey?
I don't know. I think she worked at the spa. I think so. I think that was one of the people. Yeah. He stole her. And by the way, she had no complaints about us, as you know.
No complaints. Aaron,
what is wrong with your brain that you're like, hey, child sex trafficking, you're like, well, my spa is like really good.
Let me tell you about my spa.
In response to Virginia's bombshell story, which funny enough was published in a paper belonging to Ghislaine's late father's mortal enemy, Rupert Murdoch, Maxwell called Virginia a liar. Virginia sued, and in 2015, she won a settlement, but not before Jeffrey Epstein gave us this moment in a deposition.
Is it true, sir, that you have what's been described as an egg-shaped penis? Sir, according to the police department's probable cause affidavit, one witness described your penis as oval-shaped and claimed when erect it was thick towards the bottom but was thin and small towards the head portion and called it egg-shaped. Those are not my words, I apologize. But as Mr. Critton has stated, that this is a...
I'm sorry. Like,
why'd you do that to me?
I'm sorry.
That was so disgusting. The ongoing flurry of lawsuits and looming legal trouble must have taken a toll on Maxwell, who had never once suffered any real consequences for her flippant disregard for the humanity of people she deemed lesser than she.
So fast forward to early 2017. Jeffrey Epstein's former bestie, Donald Trump, has just been elected president. Epstein's victims are still fighting to have that shitty deal undone. And who does Trump nominate to be his Secretary of Labor?
Alex fucking Acosta.
Alex fucking Acosta, the plea deal guy.
Acosta was actually Trump's second nominee to head the Department of Labor, as the person who had been nominated to be Secretary of Labor before him, Andrew Pudzer, had his nomination derailed because of domestic violence allegations. Acosta was eventually confirmed, with 8 Senate Democrats crossing the aisle to side with the Republicans. It was around this time that Ghislaine Maxwell's disappearing act began. She had sold her Manhattan home in 2016, the one that Jeffrey Epstein had bought for her through his lawyer. She stopped showing up at parties. Maybe she was about to get away with it.
Or maybe not. Alex Acosta's confirmation as Secretary of Labor brought the 2008 Epstein plea deal back to the surface. The appointment especially did not sit right with Miami Herald reporter Julie K. Brown, who revisited the Epstein case. She pored through literally thousands of court and legal documents relating to Epstein. Over the course of over a year, she interviewed more than 80 women who claimed they'd been victimized by Epstein and often Maxwell when they were underage. In 2018, the Herald published Brown's bombshell 3-part series on the way Acosta and company fumbled the bag.
This, along with the continued advocacy of survivors like Virginia Dufresne, blew the Epstein story into something too big to contain. In February 2019, U.S. District Judge Kenneth A. Mara found that Alex Acosta and his team had violated the Crime Victims' Rights Act when they secretly brokered a deal with Epstein without telling the victims. The judge also ruled that Acosta and company had lied to the survivors, leading them to believe that there was an ongoing FBI investigation when there actually wasn't.
It was, like, so fucked up and evil. On July 6, 2019, Jeffrey Epstein was arrested for a fresh set of sex crimes in New York. Man, I guess he didn't get rehabilitated during his, hotel stay in 2009. When they raided his townhouse, they found a safe that they had to use a saw to open. Inside it, they found hard drives, loose diamonds, several passports from different countries containing different names, including an Austrian passport that claims Epstein's residence was in Saudi Arabia. They also found $70,000 in cash and CDs, some of which were labeled Young Woman's Name and Mr. Last Name.
Well, here's something crazy about those CDs and hard drives. The FBI didn't have a warrant to search the contents of those, and so they had to leave them behind. When they returned to the house with the proper warrant, they were gone. Later, Epstein's attorney gave them to the authorities. Nothing suspicious going on at all, I'm sure.
It's an honest mistake anybody would make. On July 11th, Acosta resigned as Donald Trump's Secretary of Labor. Of the resignation, Trump said, "I feel very badly, actually, for Secretary Acosta because I've known him as being somebody that works hard and has done such a good job. I feel very badly about the whole situation." We're going to be looking at that and looking at it very closely.
Hmm.
A month later, Jeffrey Epstein was found dead in his holding cell by apparent suicide. But of course, the whole thing is very suspicious. Why didn't Epstein have a cellmate? Why didn't guards check on him every 30 minutes on the night he died, as is required by suicide watch protocols? Why wasn't the surveillance system working? Why was Epstein found hanging in a near seated position? Why was there a bunch of practice nooses with him in the cell?
Huh. Well, back to our girl, Ghislaine. Now that Jeffrey was dead, the heat was on her. But nobody really knew where she was until the feds arrested her at her lavish million-dollar hideout in New Hampshire, which she had purchased in an all-cash transaction through an LLC. When she toured the house before purchasing it, she pretended to be a journalist named Janet Marshall. The sellers had no idea.
Oh my God, imagine if you sold your house to Ghislaine Maxwell.
Zoink, Scoob.
Ooh. Ghislaine Maxwell was indicted in July 2020 and charged with crimes that occurred between 1994 and 1997. The indictment alleged that she contributed to the sexual abuse of underage girls at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein and others. Here's what then-President Donald Trump had to say when an accused child sex trafficker was finally apprehended by the FBI.
Ghislaine Maxwell is in prison. And so a lot of people want to know if she's going to turn in powerful people. And I know you've talked in the past about Prince Andrew, and you've criticized Bill Clinton's behavior. I'm wondering, do you feel that she's going to turn in powerful men? How do you see that working out?
I don't know. I haven't really been following it too much. I just wish her well, frankly. I've met her numerous times over the years, especially since I lived in Palm Beach. And I guess they lived in Palm Beach. But I wish her well. Whatever it is, I don't know the situation with Prince Andrew. Just don't know. Not aware of it.
The best thing, anytime he's asked about a major news story and he's like, I don't know. No one's more online than he is. One of the prosecutors on the case of the United States v. Maxwell was Southern District of New York attorney Maureen Comey, the daughter of former FBI Director James Comey. A handful of survivors testified, including Vicki Ward's source, Annie Farmer, and another survivor who claimed that Maxwell and Epstein recruited her when she was at Interlochen Arts Camp as a young teenager.
Ghislaine's vibe was one of a spoiled rich girl who could not believe that the rules were finally applying to her. When the judge asked if she'd be testifying in her own defense, Maxwell stood up, ignored the judge, and told the court that there was no need for her to testify because the prosecution hadn't proven its case.
Shades of her behavior during a 2016 deposition in a lawsuit filed by Virginia Giuffre, during which she petulantly pounded her fists on the table at one point like Veroka Salt from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. In December 2021, Maxwell was found guilty on 5 of 6 counts. She was sentenced to 20 years in prison. One of her siblings threw a dramatic conniption about her treatment at the minimum security facility, claiming that Maxwell's hair had fallen out because she was being starved. But in public appearances since her arrest, she seems to have plenty of hair.
One surprising thing that the public learned from the legal filings was that, unbeknownst to everybody, including her friends and family, Ghislaine Maxwell had been secretly married since 2016.
I'm sorry, married?
Yeah, married to a guy she started seeing in 2013. Look, if Ghislaine Maxwell can get at least 2 rich men to fall in love with her after it's pretty clear that she had a large role to play in a massive child sex trafficking ring, maybe we should be calling her Ghislaine Maxwell. Sorry, that's awful. In 2016, funny. Maxwell married Scott Borgerson, which is not a name that a teenager made up on the fly when a police officer caught him smoking pot.
According to media reports, Scott and Jiz bonded over shared interests such as purebred Vislas, which are a type of Hungarian hunting dog known for being beautiful but clingy, Velcro dogs. But after Maxwell's arrest, things between her and Borgerson began to unravel, and Maxwell has since filed for divorce.
Maxwell and Borgerson's relationship is so confusing. So he is 15 years younger than Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
There is no public record of their marriage or divorce. He was in the Coast Guard. He was a former fellow in residence at the Council on Foreign Relations, and his maritime data analytics company sounds fake. When he was reached out to by the New York Times in 2020, he claimed that he and Ghislaine were just friends. However, when she was arrested, it was in a house that she and Borgerson owned together, and he was seen walking her dog, and he filed some legal paperwork on behalf. Like, is he a spy too? Is everyone in this a spy?
He's a spy or an extremely incomplete and bad liar.
And now we've reached the maelstrom of 2025. President Trump, who promised complete transparency regarding the Epstein case during his 2024 campaign, has, surprise, surprise, done whatever he can to wriggle out of fulfilling that campaign promise. I wonder why.
Trump's DOJ is now headed by Pam Bondi, the same Pam Bondi that had slow-walked Epstein's victims when she was attorney general in Florida.
She promised early in her term that she had the Epstein client list, quote, sitting on her desk waiting for her to review it. In May, Bondi informed President Trump that his name was, in the FBI's Epstein files. In June, Elon Musk posted to X that the reason Trump hadn't released the files was because he was in them. He's since deleted that post, but the horse was out of the barn.
On July 7th, an unsigned memo from the Department of Justice stated that there was actually no Epstein client list after all, and that Jeffrey Epstein definitely killed himself. When pressed on this 180, Pam Bondi had this flop sweat soaked explanation.
In February, I did an interview on Fox, and it's been getting a lot of attention because I said I was asked a question about the client list, and my response was, it's sitting on my desk to be reviewed, meaning the file along with the JFK, MLK files as well. That's what I meant by that. And the minute missing from the video, we released the video showing definitively the video was not conclusive, but the evidence prior to it was showing he committed suicide. And what was on that, there was a minute that was off the counter. And what we learned from Bureau of Prisons was every year, every night, they redo that video. It's old, from like 1999. So every night the video is reset, and every night should have the same minute missing. So we're looking for that video to release that as well, showing that a minute is missing every night. And that's it on Epstein.
They never did release those other videos, did they, Aaron?
No.
No.
That week, the Justice Department released what it claims were 11 hours of raw, unedited footage from the outside of Epstein's cell on the night of his death in August 2019. But analysis of the footage revealed that it was not raw. It was spliced together from multiple video files, and that one of the files was missing nearly 3 minutes of footage. Further, the camera's view of Epstein's cell was obstructed, so somebody could have gotten in and out of there without being detected. There's also like an orange shape that is seen moving in it.
Ah, yes, that clears it right up. Meanwhile, Trump continues to act very innocent.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein? This guy's been talked about for years. You're asking, we have Texas, we have this, we have all of the things. And are people still talking about this guy, this creep?
From what I understand, thousands of pages of documents have been given. But it's really a Democrat hoax because they're trying to get people to talk about something that's totally irrelevant to the success that we've had as a nation since I've been president.
I don't understand why the Jeffrey Epstein case would be of interest to anybody. It's pretty boring stuff.
Pretty boring stuff that I'm going to shout about over the Air Force One engines. And as his base and the American people started to believe that maybe Donald Trump had sexually preyed on underage girls the way he had been accused 24 times of sexually preying on adult women, all eyes were on Ghislaine.
There were whispers that she was angling for a pardon or commuted sentence.
Amid that, Trump made no effort to hide that he's been trying to butter up Ghislaine into exonerating him.
It's a flawless plan. Who is more trustworthy in the eyes of the general public than a child sex trafficker? Okay, so tinfoil hat time for real. On July 11th, 2025, days after that DOJ memo, Maureen Comey was fired from her position as U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York. The media speculated that this was Donald Trump being a petty little bitch by firing the daughter of the FBI director that he had fired, James Comey. But what if it was actually not about the James Comey thing at all? What if Maureen Comey's firing was actually a move to impress Ghislaine Maxwell?
Abso-fucking-lutely. Yes, 100%.
The firing happened right when it was clear that the Trump administration wasn't going to be able to make this Epstein stuff go away. It happened after the Trump administration released that nothing to see here memo.
And on July 24th and 25th, Trump loyalist and high-level DOJ official Todd Blanche questioned Maxwell. During the questioning, she said she'd never seen Trump do anything bad with underage girls and that she had no memory of Donald Trump drawing a crude picture of a naked woman's torso alongside the message, "May every day be a wonderful secret," in Jeffrey Epstein's birthday book. And then she was transferred a week later. Huh.
Maxwell's testimony would hold a bit more weight if this September the House committee released a photo of the page in the Jeffrey Epstein birthday book where Donald Trump drew a crude picture of a naked woman's torso alongside the message, "May every day be a wonderful secret." That's the page Maxwell said didn't exist.
Seems like it exists.
And in another very not guilty move, Trump scheduled a military jet flyover at the same time as a long scheduled press conference featuring victims of Epstein and Maxwell advocating for more transparency.
This woman abused children.
The latest attempt by Trump to do anything but transparency regarding the Epstein-Maxwell case is to claim through surrogates like House Speaker Mike Johnson that he was actually an FBI informant who turned Epstein into authorities.
It's such a bad excuse.
It's incredible.
But others in the right-wing ecosystem have started to run with this, such as podcaster Tim Pool, who suggested that Trump may have been ratting on famous people involved with Epstein, which is why he doesn't want the Epstein files out there. Mm. It's so easy to poke holes in this. Like, if Trump was a one-man pedophile sting operation this whole time, then why does he keep hiring and promoting people to work for him who participated in shielding or slow-walking investigations into Epstein and Maxwell? Why have so few people whose names appear many, many times on the Epstein flight logs, including people Trump hates like Bill Clinton, why haven't they been prosecuted for their crimes?
If Trump's a rat, he only gives out bad cheese.
We interrupt this video with breaking news.
2 days after we recorded the first part of this video, Bloomberg News published a bombshell. The piece detailed what their reporters found when they were able to obtain 18,000 messages from one of Jeffrey Epstein's email addresses. These messages spanned from 2002 until 2022, although after he died, most of the emails were marketing offers.
So these Epstein messages confirm what we suspected based on publicly available information and the fact that Ghislaine Maxwell has a long history of having a tenuous relationship with the truth. Ghislaine Maxwell seems like she lied her face off to the feds on July 24th and 25th, 2025.
During the DOJ interview, Maxwell played dumb about Epstein's sex trafficking operation and claimed she was kept in the dark about all the molestation that had been going on right under her nose. She also said she didn't know anything about Epstein's network of famous friends. She told Trump administration official Todd Blanche that her relationship with Epstein lessened considerably by 2004, but Epstein's emails show that this was complete bunk.
The two were emailing each other nearly every day, sometimes multiple times per day. Alyssa, it's like me and you texting each other.
I mean, come on.
In the years after Ghislaine said that she and Jeffrey had started distancing themselves from each other, Ghislaine was managing his social calendar, getting him introduced to famous and important people, arranging private plane rides for friends and associates. According to a spreadsheet of gifts, Alyssa, she was suggesting and procuring gifts for the girls that she and Epstein have been accused of abusing. Things like SAT classes and Thai massage classes.
All of this was recorded in a spreadsheet that detailed the type of gift, its recipient, its cost, and who arranged it. Ghislaine Maxwell's initials, GM, appear on many of the entries. Guess Maxwell corporate gifts lives on.
One of the gifts listed was an $11,000 Rolex watch allegedly given to Tom Barrack in 2003. You might recognize that name, Alyssa, because Tom Barrack is currently serving as Donald Trump's ambassador to Turkey. And a representative of his said that he'd never received a gift of any kind from Jeffrey Epstein, for what it's worth. Contrary to her testimony to the DOJ, Ghislaine did have detailed information about what kind of trouble Epstein was in and why. In 2008, while Epstein's lawyers were in the thick of negotiating his sweetheart deal with Alex Acosta, Maxwell advised Epstein on which charge would be preferable for his defense: lewd and lascivious conduct versus procuring minors for prostitution.
Charmingly, Ghislaine wanted to make sure they kept the word prostitute in there in reference to the teenagers the pair terrorized.
In 2014, Maxwell and Epstein talked in detail about how to smear the character of accuser Virginia Roberts Giuffre in the media, at one point mulling if they should leak that she dabbled in witchcraft, did a lot of drugs, and had lied about being raped in the past. A New York Daily News report published shortly thereafter questioned Giuffre's credibility using many of the details discussed over email by Ghislaine. And this wouldn't be a Jeffrey and Ghislaine update without Jizz.
Ew.
I'm sorry. It's her nickname. According to Bloomberg, days after Epstein's Palm Beach property was raided by the FBI, Ghislaine emailed Jeffrey about a fertility treatment. She said, quote, "You can do the sample at home," and then reminded him that he must collect all of his ejaculate within 90 minutes of her procedure. What did they do to Ghislaine? What did they do with Jeffrey's little cup of Jeffrey? Unclear from the emails.
Ooh, but what is clear is that Ghislaine is ride or die in the worst way possible.
Now, more Epstein files keep coming out in a drip, drip, drip. So by the time you see this, there'll probably be more stuff that you wish you could scrub from your brain. Now back to your previously recorded programming. The White House has also claimed that the government simply cannot release the files because a judge said they must remain sealed. But since when have they cared about listening to judges?
I mean, I'm old enough to remember when Trump claimed that it was legal for him to have stacks of classified documents in a bathroom at Mar-a-Lago because as the former president, he was able to declassify any document he wanted with his mind.
I remember that too. We might never know what's inside those files and exactly how Trump is implicated. A lot of people who are in a position to know the truth aren't alive anymore. And a lot of the people who are still alive in this saga have proven themselves unreliable or unwilling to speak. So let's break down some of the theories behind why Epstein and Maxwell did what they did.
The most straightforward Occam's razor explanation is to take everything we know at face value. Jeffrey Epstein is a brilliant and charismatic financial genius who was able to use his wealth and power to pursue his true passion of molesting teenagers. And Maxwell was so desperate to cling to the unearned superiority she'd been brought up with that she was willing to do anything to maintain access to the lifestyle that Jeffrey gave her and that she was not able to obtain on her own, up to and including child sex trafficking.
More out there is the theory that Epstein and Maxwell were involved in the Maxwell family business. No, not newspapers, Alyssa. Spying. The theory goes that, like Maxwell's father, allegedly, Epstein was working for Israeli intelligence. At least one high-profile source affiliated with the intelligence agency has alleged that Epstein and Maxwell were running a surveillance and blackmail operation, filming powerful men having sex with underage girls and using the presence of those recordings to extract money and information. The downside of the theory is that the source is unknown fabulist.
Okay. There are a few corroborating anecdotes that hint that Epstein may have been recording people in his home without their knowledge. He had some art of framed 3D eyeballs hanging in his place in Manhattan. Virginia Giuffre and other survivors have alleged seeing hidden cameras around. The FBI did find CDs with the names of young girls and adult men written on them and surveillance cameras in his place in Palm Beach. And earlier in 2025, Attorney General Pam Bondi said that the FBI had tens of thousands of videos involving Epstein, which she says will never see the light of day because they're all depictions of his child sexual abuse.
Okay, but like, then why aren't we like arresting dozens and dozens of like child sexual abusers? It doesn't make any sense.
This case, Erin, has collectively melted our brains.
It sure doesn't help that so many people close to Ghislaine Maxwell have died tragically or mysteriously. The part of my brain that already was seeing little conspiracies everywhere tells me that she must be still alive for a reason. Like, in addition to Epstein, at least 22 people associated with the case have died mysteriously. And many of the deaths took place after Epstein's. Like, Epstein pal, former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who died in his sleep in September 2023. Thomas Bowers, the head of the Deutsche Bank division that helped Jeffrey Epstein move money around, was found hanged in his house in California in November 2019. Hollywood producer Steve Bing fell to his death from the 27th floor of an LA high-rise in 2020, not long after he talked to the FBI about Jeffrey Epstein. But Jeffrey Epstein was dead, right? Jean-Luc Brunel, who ran MC2 Models, which he started with Jeffrey Epstein's money, allegedly supplied Epstein with girls through his agency. He was found hanged in a French prison cell in February 2022. Attorney Ken Starr died after surgical complications in September 2022. Joe Ricari, the lead Palm Beach police detective on the Epstein case, died when he was only 50 in May 2018 after a brief illness.
One of Jeffrey Epstein's old mentors, Steve Hoffenberg, who was imprisoned for running a giant Ponzi scheme, died in his home after cooperating with the FBI on the Epstein case. Hoffenberg even claimed that Epstein and Maxwell were running a sophisticated honey trap surveillance operation where footage of important men having sex with underage girls was used to blackmail the rich and powerful.
And tragically, three of Maxwell and Epstein's victims that we know of have died. Carolyn Andriano, 36, and Lee Sky Patrick, 29, died of drug overdoses in May 2023 and May 2017. And Virginia Roberts Giuffre, the survivor whose tireless and fearless advocacy likely emboldened so many others to come forward, died of an alleged suicide in April of 2023. Before she died, she wrote a memoir that is supposed to be published this fall, which we'll be definitely purchasing on its pub date if Amazon doesn't have a little accident and all of a sudden its systems just happen to go down that day. But the survivors of Epstein and Maxwell's depraved operation carry scars with them to this day. Epstein and Maxwell stole their innocence from them. Like, these girls are never going to be the same. What they went through did not need to happen. And it wouldn't have happened if not for Ghislaine Maxwell. There you have it. Ghislaine Maxwell, the world's most famous living child sex trafficker. Alyssa, how do you rate Ghislaine Maxwell on our matrix of fucking guys?
So I'm going to say she's 100% scheming sociopath. And I think opportunist. Right? Do we think she's a true believing zealot? No, she's not. But the only thing she believes in is money. She's a sociopath and opportunist.
I completely agree. She's on the extreme end of both.
And that about wraps up the time we have for this episode of This Fucking Guy. If you like what you've seen, hit subscribe, share with your friends, and leave us a comment if you've got an idea for a future fucking guy we should spotlight.
This episode was written by me with an assist from Alyssa Mastromonaco. Rachel Gajewski is our video producer. All the rest of the credits, as well as links to our sources, can be found in the YouTube description and our show notes.
Take care, be well,
and fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.